Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello everyone, Charles Watts here. Welcome back to Inside Arsenal. It is Friday. We are very nearly at the weekend and at the end of the first week of the international break, which is always a good thing. Only 9 days to go now until that game at the Etihad. It is beginning to feel very, very real. What a huge week that is going to be next week as we prepare for that top of the table clash. Some might say title decider, probably too early to label it that, but a huge, huge game. Only 9 days away. But there is, of course, plenty of international fixtures between now and then. Arsenal players involved for the first time in the international break last night. Jakub Kivior, Alexander Zinchenko, Jorginho. Plenty more involved tonight and tomorrow as well. So we'll go over a few of those things. Round up a little bit of the international action so far in today's show. We'll talk about Bukayo Saka, injury concern over him after he dropped out of the England squad yesterday, so we'll talk about that. Got plenty of questions and comments from you guys as well, responding to what we've been speaking about over the last few days on this channel. But we'll start with the big news about Bukayo Saka that broke sort of yesterday evening. We knew that he hadn't trained on England's first day of their meetup. We were told that he was basically training inside, sort of following a routine that had been carefully managed up, and now we find out that he has left the England campus. As you can see, if you're watching on YouTube, statement came out at 6:15 p.m. on Thursday from England saying Bukayo Saka has left the England camp and returned to his club for continued rehabilitation. The Arsenal forward reported to St. George's Park with an injury and has been unable to participate in training. No further replacements are planned as a 25-man England squad continue their preparation for the forthcoming internationals with Brazil and Belgium. So no Saka against Brazil tomorrow night or in the game against Belgium on Tuesday. As far as I'm aware, it's nothing to be overly concerned about. Look, it's obviously something to be concerned about because he's got an injury 9 days before Arsenal's huge game against City. But I'm told it's nothing serious. It's described to me as a slight muscle injury with Bukayo. That's all I know. It's all I've found out about it. A slight muscle injury is being described to me, but I was told that it's nothing really to worry about. So you would hope that this decision has been taken after some good conversation between Arsenal, Saka, England, all the medical staff. And I thought, you know, England would be well aware of where Arsenal are in terms of their season, the huge games they've got coming up, both domestically and in Europe. And Gareth Southgate doesn't need to know anything else about Bukayo Saka. As big as these two games are against Brazil and Belgium, number five in the world and number four in the world, I think, you know, they're big high-profile fixtures for England. They are only friendlies to warm up for the Euros. And, you know, Gareth Southgate knows everything he needs to know about Bukayo Saka. He's not going to learn anything new by him playing in these two games. And so you'd hope that this is just a sensible decision that's been taken following communication from all sides and with the awareness of what Arsenal have got coming up and how important Bukayo Saka is to what Arsenal have got coming up, that the decision was taken to send him back just to let him get over this injury back at London Colney, not to take any risk. Because the worst thing, not just for Arsenal, but the worst thing for England as well right now, is if you push Bukayo Saka when you don't really need to, he ends up doing something, you know, if this is a muscle injury, and we don't know what, you know, all I'm being told is muscle. I don't know if it's hamstring, calf, thigh, I don't know. But if it's, say, a hamstring, you know, it's tight hamstring or a tight calf, the worst thing England could do was play him in one of these games. He pick up that injury. Not only does he miss crucial games for Arsenal in the title running, but then he also misses crucial game time to get him prepared for the Euros as well. And, you know, if you're suddenly out for 2 months going into the Euros, then you're a major doubt for Gareth Southgate. And Saka is so important to them, you'd just think this is just a very sensible decision by all parties. So, yeah, if I hear anything more on Saka, then I will, of course, let you know. But for now, I'm just being told it's nothing too serious, nothing overly to worry about. And it is just a minor muscle injury. And that is why he has been sent back to, sent back to London Colney. Right, moving on. Now Arsenal were in action, or an Arsenal 11 were in action. It was basically an under-21s team, plus Tomiyasu and Partey yesterday, and behind closed doors friendly against QPR. I thought a friendly would be set up during this break, behind closed doors game. I thought it'd be a stronger team, though. You know, I genuinely thought we could see a pretty full strength Arsenal side, or as much as full strength as you can be while you're missing players for international duty. You know, I thought Mikel would use this to really put quite a competitive fixture together. It hasn't happened, or it might happen this weekend, I don't know. But for now, Tomiyasu and Partey played in an under-21s game yesterday against QPR. QPR won 4-0. I think it was 1-0 at half-time, then scored 3 goals in the second half. Tomiyasu played for 45 minutes. Partey played for 62 minutes, or 64 minutes, sorry. Really valuable minutes for them, obviously, coming back from their injury layoffs. We've seen a little bit of Partey in the first team since he's returned. Nothing of Tomiyasu, so really good to see him get 45 minutes. Obviously, that was the plan at the start of the day, was for Tommy to get 45 minutes, Partey to get an hour. They've done that, and just view it as really valuable minutes for the pair of them as they start stepping up their sort of attempts to get back to full fitness ahead of the run-in. So good to see. They came through it unscathed, which is absolutely the most important thing. And I wouldn't be too worried about result. I've seen people honestly having a meltdown on social media about result. I mean, look at that team. And it was against a strong QPR side by all accounts as well. And so basically a patched up 21s and 18s team combined with Tomiyasu and Partey lose. And people are going mad about it on social media. It's just like, calm down, guys, relax. Seriously, don't get too worked up about it. But yeah, really good news to see Tomiyasu and Partey back, and hopefully that will serve them well going into the title run-in. International-wise, over the last day or so, Jakub Kivior and Oleksandr Zinchenko, very good days for the Arsenal pair yesterday in their Euro 2024 playoffs. I think it was 5-1. Poland beat Estonia, and Karl Heine, not such a good day for him. And Ukraine came from behind to beat Bosnia 2-1, I think. So both of them are through to the sort of playoff finals now, just one game away from booking their spot in the Euros. Kivior and Poland play Wales, I believe. Wales had a really good win yesterday. And Ukraine, I've forgotten who Ukraine have got. I probably should have known about that. I did look it up and I've forgotten. Apologies. Let's see. Ukraine have got Iceland on Tuesday night, and that is a game that's going to be played in Poland. So really good days for both of those Arsenal pair. Jorginho also played yesterday. He came on as a second half substitute for Italy in their 2-1 win. More Arsenal players involved tonight. We've got Martin Odegaard playing against the Czechs. That's in Oslo, 5 p.m. kickoff. David Raya is playing for Spain against Colombia at West Ham at 8:30 p.m. tonight. And then tomorrow you've got Trossard playing for Belgium. You've got Declan Rice and Aaron Ramsdale for England against Brazil. And then you've got Saliba versus Havertz as France take on Germany in Lyon. So the international fixtures starting to pile up now. Fingers crossed everyone comes through them okay. And it certainly was a good sign yesterday that Kivior and Zinchenko. And good. And when I say it's valuable minutes for Partey and Tomiyasu yesterday in that behind closed doors friendly, good valuable minutes for Zinchenko yesterday as well. Captain Ukraine to that win, went off in the second half. Didn't sound like he had the best of games, Zinchenko, but you know, he's barely played for a long, long time. So it's just good to see him getting back and good to see him getting some minutes, because that will only serve Arsenal well. Again, just as I was saying about Tomiyasu and Thomas Partey. Right, moving on to some questions and comments now. Got quite a lot to discuss here. A lot of you get in touch. This is in response to what I was talking about yesterday with Gyökeres We looked at what some of the comments Gyökeres has made in his press conference during the international break, talking about the interest from the likes of Arsenal, reported interest from the likes of Arsenal and other top clubs. And I was talking about Gyökeres yesterday, and you guys have been responding to it. Rhett Stevens says, I don't see Arsenal going for Gyökeres as the first option. I think it will be Osimhen as the first, and Gyökeres could be second or third. But if we are spending this much money, 80 million plus on a striker, he has to be a player who has experience in the Champions League and multiple seasons playing at the top level. We cannot afford a slip up. Whichever striker we sign, we'll have to be able to go toe-to-toe with Haaland or Nunes as a prolific goal scorer. Gyökeres, to me, sounds like a player with immense potential, but would be a huge gamble for how much money Sporting are currently asking. If he had one, two more seasons under his belt at Sporting, I'd be more convinced, but one breakout season is just not enough. George says, I think Gyökeres looks to have a really heavy touch, which he gets away with in Portuguese league. If you're going to be spending top money, you may as well spend it on a bit more and go for Osimhen, in my opinion. Arsenal OG says Gyökeres for 85 million or Osimhen for 110. I prefer Sesko for 43 million and 20 years old, if based on form, by Guirassy for 17 million. So lots of you responded about the striker chat we were having yesterday. For the top there, Rhett Stevens says they have to go toe-to-toe with Haaland as a prolific goal scorer. I don't really agree with that. I wouldn't really class Nunes in the same bracket as Haaland when you're talking about prolific goal scorer. I really like Darwin Nunes, by the way. I think he's a fantastic player. And I think he does have the attributes to potentially be a 30 goal a season striker. He just needs to sharpen up his finishing enough, because he gets enough chances to score that amount of goals. But he's not on the same level as Haaland. And I don't think you really need someone to go toe to toe with Haaland anyway, because there's not really anyone who can do that. You know, Haaland's the best striker in the world, in my opinion, along with Harry Kane. And Arsenal aren't going to sign Harry Kane this summer. So I don't think you need someone to match Haaland. You just need someone to take Arsenal up a level a little bit and just be another option as a striker, a better option than Eddie Nketiah. No disrespect to Eddie, but just a better option. That's how you raise the level of the squad. So I'm not sure you need to necessarily compete with Haaland. And when you talk about Nunes, you know, Nunes came in from Portugal, didn't he? Had a really good couple of time at Benfica before Liverpool made that move. That was big money. Came in, was a bit sketchy at first, but we're certainly starting to see the best of Nunes, even if he is still missing chances. And if Gyökeres came in and made the sort of impact that Nunes has done, then I'd be very, very happy. And I think Arsenal will be a much better team and squad for it. There's always that argument about Osimhen and Gyökeres. I like Osimhen. I really do. There was a time when I thought Osimhen was the guy, but now the more I've seen of him, I'm not overly convinced that he's a guy, especially for that amount of money that Arsenal would spend. And a lot of you, I think, were getting a bit sort of confused by what I was saying about Gyökeres yesterday. Like Pradeep Tog says, hi Charles, I usually agree with your opinions in general, but I have to disagree with your take on Gyökeres and that Arsenal shouldn't buy him since he's untested in the PL. That way we won't be able to buy someone if our criteria is should be young, should be tried and tested in PL, should be affordable, under 100 million. How many players satisfied all three? I wasn't saying that Arsenal shouldn't sign Gyökeres. If Arsenal sign Gyökeres, I'll be perfectly happy, and I'll absolutely trust the talent ID and the fact that Arteta and Eddie believe he is the guy and that they're willing to spend that amount of money on him. All I was saying was I kind of look at it as a bit of a risk, because I just haven't seen enough of him to suggest he's going to be worth £85 million. There's just not a huge enough sample size. But that's not saying I don't want him at all. If Arsenal do it, they pull the trigger and they get it done, I'll be perfectly happy. I'll be very excited about it because he does look like an exciting striker. All I was saying yesterday, I was trying to sort of balance my view on it a little bit. So I absolutely wasn't saying that they shouldn't sign him. No, you know, if that's who they believe is going to take Arsenal to another level, then by all means, sign him. I was just saying I would have reservations about it, but that's all it would be. It's just reservations. It's not saying don't do it. And Alan Najenga says, hi, Charles and James, obviously replying to us on Inside Arsenal Extra Time, which went out yesterday. So as always, great content. I have a question. If I recall correctly, so many Gooners, Charles and I included, were excited about potentially signing Mudryk for 85 million. That would have been a huge risk coming from a weaker league in Ukraine than Portugal. How can we now say Gyökeres is too much of a risk? Similar sample size as Mudryk too. Admittedly, I haven't seen his performances, but I think both situations are very similar. Mind you, I'm so happy we got Trossard instead. I still think Mudryk will be a quality player. It's a really good point, you know, and I was excited about signing Mudryk. And you're right. It's exactly the same thing. There was concerns about the money Arsenal are going to pay for Mudryk because of the sample size, the lack of experience in a top level league. But I was very excited about it. And I would be excited by Gyökeres. I'm not saying I wouldn't be. It's exactly that. I would genuinely be excited about it, especially if Arsenal are convinced that he's worth that money, because I would give my, you know, I trust what they do and what they're and how they're thinking. So it's very good, well worth pointing that out, Alan. And yeah, I think you're right. And it is a very similar situation to Mudryk, who, by the way, like you, I still think could be a really, really good player. Mudryk, I think we're beginning to see signs of it now at Chelsea. He's beginning to settle in a little bit. He's doing certainly doing better than he was when he first arrived. But I'm utterly convinced, had Arsenal got that deal done for Mudryk, where he'd be in his career now would be in a completely different place, and he'd look a far better player than what's happened since he's gone to Chelsea.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
SP Douglas 22 now says Ramsdale for only 30 million is a joke, but correct. Arteta has ruined his value by not playing him. He should have sold him last summer if he knew Raya would be number one. Selling Nketiah, Nelson, Ramsdale, Partey, Vieira, Lagonga and Tierney. Key PSR. I've seen flashes of brilliance from him. He just needs to goal for some confidence. But a world-class striker, right winger, two centre mids and an overlapping fullback. Sorry, I think that means buy a world-class striker, right winger, two centre mids and an overlapping fullback. Frimpong could cover two positions if short on cash. Now, this is in response to what we were talking about yesterday and Inside Arsenal Extra Time. If you haven't seen it yet, myself and James sat down and we sort of focused a lot on what was going to happen on the summer, went through the squad, looked at some of the decisions that are facing Edu and Mikel Arteta, looking at who could go, who could potentially come in. And we were talking about Ramsdale and we were talking about the sort of how much money some of the players who could potentially go could get. And I think we said sort of 30 million for Ramsdale, 20 million for ESR and who else? Eddie Reese potentially. And so that's SP Douglas's comment is in relation to that. And Ashmead below says, being happy with a combined 60 million for Reese, ESR and Nketiah is partly the reason why Arsenal have been no good at selling. If we're the blue side of London, we're getting 100 million for those three combined, no less. Three players, all under 25, high ceilings, high potential. Last season, we picked Eddie over Flo, who we sold for 30 million. Yeah, I'm not saying I'm happy with 60 million for those three. I'm just looking at the market the way it is at the moment. I just think it's going to be incredibly hard to sell. No one's got any money. Even the clubs in the Premier League now, who you could kind of look at and think maybe they could afford it. Suddenly, everyone's under these PSR rules and are really worried about overstretching themselves and having a almost sell now just to sort of make sure they hit the guidelines. Clubs that you'd look at who you think, oh, they might be able to come in and sign an Eddie, or if Emil is going to leave, maybe he could go to a Newcastle or an Aston Villa. But both of those clubs look like they might have to sell players at the moment to get around the rules. And so are they really going to be able to suddenly put what we expect or want on the table? I don't know. I just think it's going to be a really hard summer for selling. And it's already incredibly difficult to sell if you're a Premier League club because of the money you demand, because of the wages these players are on. Unless you're selling to another Premier League club, it's incredibly difficult to get a deal done now because there's no money in across Europe apart from a few clubs. But now you're even struggling to sell to other Premier League clubs because they're having to balance their books and make sure they don't get docked points like we've seen happen with Everton and Nottingham Forest as well. So those sort of values I was putting on the players yesterday, it wasn't what I'd want for them. I'm just kind of thinking it's realistic. And Ramsdale, especially as SP Douglas says, you know, 30 million is about what Arsenal signed him for. You'd expect to get miles more than that. But given his situation now, given everyone knows he's number two, you know, it is going to be hard to get more than that. I'd love to get 40, 50 million for Ramsdale. But I'm just not, unless, say, Chelsea come knocking or someone like that, I just don't know if it's going to happen or not. So that's what we were talking about on the show yesterday. But let me know your thoughts on it, of course, in the comments below. Ben here, who I promised I'd read this out today because I didn't have time to do it in yesterday's show, says, since we're in a bit of a lull before the league and the Champions League return, so I was wondering what would you rank as Arsenal's great away wins. In the league, the win at Old Trafford to secure the title must be up there. A more recent one although not half as important, might be the 2-0 win at the Etihad when Cazorla ran the game in the Champions League. I'll always remember the 2-0 against Milan at the San Siro in 2008. A brilliant all-round performance. Two random ones I loved were the 1-0 against Dortmund and Ramsey's winner and the Giroud hat-trick at Olympiacos. Hoping for another great night in Munich for a few weeks. I'd love to hear your thoughts. I mean, the obvious one, certainly in my lifetime anyway, I'm thinking the great away wins. I mean, there's nothing that will ever touch Anfield 1989. 2-0 to win the title last day of the season, Mickey Thomas in the last minute. You know, it was just, well, I was going to say you do a film about it. You have done a film about it and it's going to be remembered forever. It's just to go to that great Liverpool team who hadn't lost by two goals at home for however many years it was on the final day of the season. You know, Liverpool thought they'd won the league with 1-0 in the last minute and then Mickey pops up and scores that goal and the rest is history. I mean, you just don't get better than that. It was just the ultimate away win. It was fantastic. 2 years later, when they went to Anfield and won 1-0, and Merce scored when he sort of did that lovely little finish to the outside of his foot past Grobbelaar, won it 1-0, which kind of just, I knew at that point Arsenal were going to win the league. I mean, those are great away wins. Mark Overmars at Old Trafford in 98, you know, a game Arsenal had to win if they wanted any chance of going on to win the title. They did win it, and then they went on that amazing run, won 10 in a row, and won the title. So those are the games that are really sort of stand out in the league in my lifetime. I mean, the great Champions League away nights at Real Madrid, into Milan, 5-1 at the San Siro, 1-0 at the Bernabeu, you know, really historic wins. You know, those absolutely are right up there as well for me. Some of the ones you point out there, you know, I loved that 2-0 at the Etihad, 2-0 at the San Siro against Milan in 2008 after the 0-0 in the first leg. Brilliant away performance in the league. Like I said, the 2-0 win against Man City ultimately didn't really count for anything. That win, though, as good as it was and as good as Santi was in the game, it didn't really count for anything, but it was an excellent away performance. But yeah, there's been some really big away results. Even the 2-1 in the Invincible season, the 2-1 at Chelsea in February when you go 1-0 down after a minute, it was a big game. You know, could Arsenal come back and win? And they did. And the winner Anfield early in the season with Robbie Pirès curling that one in, you know, those big away wins. If you're going to win the league, if you're going to win a major trophy, you have to get those big away wins at some point in the season. And that's why I look at what's coming up for Arsenal now, with that Man City game on the 31st, with Spurs away at the end of the season, even with United away at the end of the season. You know, Arsenal are going to have to win, I would say, two of those games, at least, if they're going to win the title. It's a big ask, but that's what winning the title's about. You have to go to these away grounds and win and prove you're worthy of being the Premier League champion. And I can't wait to see if the team can do it or not. So thanks very much for that, Ben. Lastly now, one from Irish Bro 1725. It says, hello, Charles. Did you see Wiltshire on Simon Jordan? Looking back, did the team with Cazorla, Ozil, Sanchez, Wiltshire, Giroud, etc. underperform, or was top four and a few FA Cups their realistic level? I think they probably did under, but they had a chance to win the title. The season that Leicester won the title, Arsenal had a golden opportunity to win it and they just couldn't take advantage of it. Having beaten Leicester in that game, Welbeck scored the winner. They were in such a good position. They had such a good team, experienced team, and they just underperformed. They underperformed all season, to be fair. They never played well enough in that season. There were flashes. There were some good performances. You know, they beat Leicester home and away. Leicester only lost three games that season and Arsenal beat them twice. And, you know, if other teams had done their job against Leicester, then maybe Arsenal would have gone on and won the title. But they still had a chance to do it. They only got 71 points that season. Leicester won the league with 81 points. I had it here. I had a look. You think of that team. Arsenal scored 65 goals. They only scored 65 goals that season with the likes of Sanchez and Ozil. And they should have done better. They really should have done better with that season. They had such a golden opportunity. The loss at Man United immediately after beating Leicester, when Arsenal went and played basically a United youth team under Van Gaal and Rashford scored those two goals and Arsenal lost 3-2. It was a moment I really lost my faith in Wenger and thought he's got to go. If he can't motivate the team after beating Leicester, giving themselves a great chance to win the title, he couldn't get the team up enough to go and perform at Old Trafford against United's youth team. Just an injury-ravaged youth team. I remember coming away from that game just thinking, that's it, he's got to go. It needs a refresh because that was a massive missed opportunity. So I think they could have won a league during that spell with that team. They were probably just about good enough, but I think mentally they just didn't have it. And so I think that's why they end up having success in the Cups and not in the league. All right, thank you. Actually, I'm just in the back of my mind, I've just remembered, just quickly going back to Ben's question before I wrap this up. One of my favourite away wins not so much because of who they were playing and how tough it was, but the winning against Valencia in the semi-final of the Europa League under Unai Emery, when Aubameyang scored that hat-trick and Lacazette scored, and the Mestalla, just one of my favourite away games, favourite away wins. The noise, the Mestalla, I just loved the Mestalla. The atmosphere in there was incredible. Semi-final of the European competition, obviously, even though it wasn't the Champions League, it was just a brilliant night. It was a brilliant performance from Arsenal. It was one of Emery's greatest nights, if not his greatest night as an Arsenal manager. And it was just a brilliant away win. And I love that one. So I'll always hold that one very, very dear as well. All right, that's it from me, everyone. Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it. As always, anything you want me to discuss in tomorrow's show, let me know. Give me a comment, a question, reply in the comments below, and I'll pull some of those together as usual and to discuss them tomorrow. Until then, have a great start to your weekend. I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.